listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. Leading up to last Thursday's hearing, there were many comparisons to the Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill aspect of Justice Thomas's confirmation. That was back in 1991. NPR's Mary Louise Kelly talked with Anita Hill about her reflections and the Kavanaugh process, and we've linked that conversation to our website. But remember, it was recorded before Thursday morning. Court watchers, meanwhile, are comparing this controversy to more than the Clarence Thomas nomination. Add Justice Abe Fortas and the nominations of Bork and Ginsburg to the list. Merrick Garland's name should be on the list, too. And to talk more about this, I'm joined by McGeorge Constitutional Law Professor John Sims. Professor Sims, glad to have you here.
Good morning.
Is there really any accurate comparison, though, to what we're going through right now with this nomination?
No. Law professors don't generally give a definite answer to anything, but I can say no. I can't think of any hearing about a Supreme Court nomination or any federal judicial nomination, for that matter, that's been as explosive as what we saw last week.
So let's start with the Clarence Thomas Anita Hill hearing. There was a lot being said leading up to Thursday. Thursday changed everything. We're not hearing so many direct comparisons. We're now in a different mode, less about he said, she said, more about, is this a person who's lying under oath?
Yes. I mean, I think the basic approach taken by Judge Kavanaugh was the same as that taken by Clarence Thomas. That is a flat denial. But the scope of the inquiry in the Thomas hearing was so much narrower. Due to the mishandling of the hearing, and Senator Biden, I think, really ultimately has been judged very harshly in terms of how he performed on that occasion. So Anita Hill was set up as a target. It was Anita Hill against the world, and in the judgment of history, she comes out really, really well. But in the moment, she was really under a lot of pressure and a lot of attacks by the people on the panel. I think the new hearing, while still very much targeted against Dr. Ford, was more balanced. And obviously her lawyers had done a good job in trying to make sure that she had a chance to tell her story without interruption, without harassment. And she did that, and of course did it very persuasively, and that then becomes a big part of the development of the story.
Can you say anything about the comparison of FBI investigations from that investigation during the Clarence Thomas nomination process to what's happening right now? Which I should point out with Judge Kavanaugh, it is not a criminal investigation. It's an expanded or revisited background check, correct?
Yes, but I mean, I think the real issue is how much leeway do they have from the White House? And secondly, what kind of resources are they going to put into it? And of course, they're operating against a really tight timeline. But if they wanted to put enough agents on it, they could develop a lot of information between now and the end of the week. What we don't know for sure is how dedicated they are to doing that. Now, they might, who knows? I mean, they're apparently getting messages from the White House that this should only be initially 4 witnesses. But of course, when you talk to Mark Judge and he names 15 other people
exactly.
That were as part of this social group that was drinking and carousing in that high school world in the years of Judge Kavanaugh's high school career, well, then if they want to talk to those people, they could, but we don't know whether they will.
Can we go back in time to 1968? Will you talk about what happened to sitting Associate Justice Abe Fortas?
Yes. Fortas was a sitting justice on the Supreme Court, very, very close political ally and often lawyer for President Lyndon Baines Johnson. President Johnson had announced that he wasn't going to run for re-election in 1968 because of the controversy surrounding the Vietnam War. At the end of the Supreme Court term in June, Chief Justice Earl Warren announced he was retiring. And so what Johnson tried to do was to elevate Abe Fortas to the chief justiceship. That turned out to be controversial. Those mainly Republicans who opposed Fortas were able to stall things off until President Nixon was elected in November of 1968. There were controversies surrounding Fortas, some financial deals, some having to do with his close political association with LBJ. I mean, he would stay overnight at the White House in order to advise LBJ on the Vietnam War as a sitting Supreme Court justice.
Did Fortas break a rule?
It might not look good.
It might not seem right. Did it break a rule?
Well, no, it would probably, but it, as revealed, displayed a political association by a sitting Supreme Court justice that would definitely have been considered inappropriate. But the key issue was that Abe Fortas was already on the Supreme Court, so he didn't become Chief Justice. But the unraveling process that began because of his nomination to Chief Justice eventually led to more investigations, primarily done by journalists, not by the FBI. And ultimately, in the spring of 1969, after President Nixon was in, Abe Fortas had to resign. And so I guess my reaction is I do get the sense that the Republicans who are really, really trying to push Judge Kavanaugh onto the court feel they're working against a deadline. It's really important to get him on. And the opponents, of course, are very conscious of the fact once he's on, he has life tenure. But the Fortas example shows that if there's enough controversy about somebody's background or activities, that being on the Supreme Court doesn't immunize you against a continuing investigation and a continuing exploration. And based on what we've seen so far, given the multifaceted aspects to the questions that are being raised, I find it very hard to imagine that that's going to end, even if Mitch McConnell and company are able to get Kavanaugh confirmed next week, which is, I guess, their plan.
So Robert Bork and D.C. Circuit Judge Doug Ginsburg take us back to almost exactly 31 years ago. And they were in the process, did not become Supreme Court justices ultimately. But what do we take from their experience that is parallel in any way to what we're going through right now? And that phrase Borking became raised in the hearing. It became somewhat of a joke over the weekend, but it is a reference to what happened with Robert Bork.
Right. So in 1987, then D.C. Circuit Judge Robert Bork was nominated to replace Justice Powell by President Reagan. And he had very good academic credentials, but he did very poorly in the hearings. And he had written a lot of very controversial articles. And so he was ultimately defeated. And he then shortly thereafter resigned from the D.C. Circuit. He decided not to stay. There was a very short appointment or possibility for Doug Ginsburg, who was another justice on the, judge on the D.C. Circuit. Turned out he had been, while a law professor at Harvard, had been smoking marijuana with his students, which didn't seem that it was a good issue as far as possible hearings. So he withdrew immediately, and that cleared the way for Justice Kennedy to be appointed. So then in the spring, having had two failed nominations, President Reagan said, well, I need somebody that I'm sure I can get confirmed right away, and that was Justice Kennedy. So then but this shows you how life tenure works. So then Justice Kennedy, after these stops and starts, he's the third choice for that seat. But once he's on there for 30 years.
And this takes us back 31 years ago in October. So that's the time frame. You're listening to McGeorge Law Professor John Sims. Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement this summer set the process in motion that we're in the midst of this week. Justice Kennedy stayed rather low-key, but he was in Sacramento on Friday at a luncheon. He said, regarding the Kavanaugh hearings, no, we've decided carefully not to comment. That was one phrase. And then he did a little bit of a pivot, and he said, Perhaps we didn't do too good a job teaching the importance of preserving democracy by an enlightened civic discourse, he said. In the first part of the century, we're seeing the death and decline of democracy. That was a quote.
Whoa.
What do you take from that?
I don't know. I hadn't heard that remark before, but as I've already indicated, what we saw last week is very disturbing because I believe that if Judge Kavanaugh is on the Supreme Court, there's some prospect that the court will be permanently damaged, given what we know about his background and about the very credible allegations that have been made. And I really recall when Bush against Gore was decided in 2000, the 5-4 decision that in effect announced that George W. Bush had won the contested 2000 presidential election. People said to me, well, maybe people will never think about the Supreme Court the same because it's such a politicized decision and it's 5-4 and it appears to be done on such an ad hoc basis, not based on any sound doctrinal footing. And I poo-pooed that. I said, that's ridiculous. You know, we've had a lot of controversial Supreme Court decisions. We've had Roe against Wade, and we've had flag burning, and we've had now Bush against Gore. I don't believe in the long run it's going to make any difference. But I do get the sense that this controversy is different because the naked political aspects of the Supreme Court political and judicial process and the senatorial involvement is just so much more obvious and so much more dramatic and extreme than anything we've seen before. Obviously, justices are appointed out of a political milieu, but never before has a candidate for the Supreme Court denounced those opposing his nomination as being part of a political conspiracy that's engineered by a defeated presidential candidate and is designed to destroy him. There's nothing like that that I can recall.
You just made a very serious statement about how his joining the court would damage the court. Are you saying that in light of what you just explained, the politics of it all? I'll go that way. Or are you talking more about something related to Judge Kavanaugh as a candidate and his own background?
I'm really talking about the process now that he would have to succeed in order to be on the court. That is where he's seen by one party as being an essential political pawn to be moved across, be basically made a queen before the elections, and that the perception that this would be political disaster and substantive disaster if that didn't happen. And on the other side, you know, a really last-ditch effort to deny him the seat on the Supreme Court. And, I mean, I would just observe Clarence Thomas, of course, in 1991 made it across the finish line, 52-48. So he survived this process, but ultimately he hasn't really functioned fully as a member of the Supreme Court. I mean, he's one of the 9 votes, and that's very important in a lot of circumstances. But he's really marginalized intellectually, and he's been marginalized by his own choice. He does not participate in the manifestation of the Supreme Court's role in the oral arguments in the Supreme Court. He chooses not to participate in that for whatever reason. And that's about him personally and his limits in his functioning on the Supreme Court. But of course, with Judge Kavanaugh, it's been really broadened out, and it's much more about the court as an institution. Can we trust the Supreme Court to reasonably consistent over time develop the law in accordance with the Constitution? That's what we hope we have, and we've generally had since 1789. Or alternatively, do we have a group of political hacks who respond to the forces that put them on the court and do what they're expected to do no matter what the Constitution says? And if we somehow shift from that prevailing mindset about the Supreme Court into a darker, more cynical mindset about the Supreme Court, then we've really lost something and our stability in our operating system, I think, is really threatened.
I think we'll leave it right there. You phrased that in a broad way for a great conversation, a great lecture, in fact, and I think that is a lot of the question right now. So thank you, Professor Sims.
It was a pleasure to be here.
That is from University of the Pacific McGeorge School of Law, Professor John Sims. You can find more background on the Kavanaugh confirmation process and continuing coverage at capradio.org. This is Insight on Cap Radio.